David Brinkley is on vacation. I'm Chet Huntley, NBC News. The last of the American troops committed to Cambodia 2 months ago left the country today, a day ahead of schedule. They left behind about 100 American advisors working with some of the 39,000 South Vietnamese who will stay on. But the advisors are expected to leave tomorrow in accordance with President Nixon's promise to remove all ground combat forces from Cambodia by June 30th. The campaign was said to have cost the enemy nearly 15,000 dead. 339 Americans lost their lives in the Cambodian fighting.
Fire Support Base Koh Phe was one of the first American bases set up in Cambodia. It was one of the last to be abandoned. This was the home of the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment. Most of the men in the regiment have been fighting in Cambodia during the whole campaign. For the past 2 months, they've known nothing but the endless red mud, the hot sun, and the almost daily rains. Most of them tell the same story, that it was easy at first. They say they caught the enemy off guard, and in the early days of Cambodia, there were only light scattered contacts. But in the last week, it's been getting worse. The enemy has apparently had a chance to regroup, and they've been attacking. In the last week in Cambodia, the 11th had been mortared almost every night, and their patrols have been constantly ambushed. The trip back into Vietnam took only an hour. Koh Phe was only about 3 miles from the border, but it was a tense trip. The men say the enemy was all around them in the heavy bamboo jungle that grows right up to the road. The enemy could be just a few feet away unseen because of the heavy growth. When the convoy of armor got to the border, you could almost hear a sigh of relief. They had made it without any incidents. One soldier told me, "I never thought I'd be glad to see Vietnam." Lou Davis, NBC News, with the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment back in Vietnam.
Premier Noel of Cambodia, for one, wasn't too happy to see the Americans go. He expressed the hope that they'd be sent back if the situation deteriorates. And he indicated he had been promised American air support for his troops. Secretary of State Rogers, on his way to the CETO conference in Manila, said in San Francisco that American intervention in Cambodia had severely damaged the enemy's capacity to fight in Vietnam. And he hinted also that the possibility of a coalition government with the communists might be a solution in Vietnam. He said that the communists just might decide to negotiate an agreement. Earlier, Rogers conferred with President Nixon at San Clemente.
The president and Rogers posed for pictures outside Mr. Nixon's San Clemente office. Most of all, they'd come together to discuss Cambodia, what the president would say about it in reporting tomorrow that all American ground troops are out as promised for June 30th. It's expected Mr. Nixon will close the Cambodian operation by proclaiming new Vietnam peace overtures this week, including the appointment of a new chief U.S. negotiator at the Paris talks. That post has been vacant since December when Henry Cabot Lodge resigned. The president and Rogers moved their talks to the Nixon residence nearby before the secretary, with a brief stopover in San Francisco, took off for Asia and Europe for conferences with other world leaders. Conferences following through on what Mr. Nixon will proclaim tomorrow and in his television interview Wednesday night. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News, with the president in San Clemente.
Gordon Allott, a Colorado Republican and an administration supporter on the Indochina War, tried today to maneuver the Senate into voting on the McGovern-Hatfield Amendment, which calls for getting this country out of Indochina by June 30, 1971. He did it by bringing up the amendment as his own, and he hoped it would be soundly defeated. But the tactic failed to work. The Senate voted 62-29 to table the measure.
The vote today was more to uphold Senate tradition and procedure than it was to save the McGovern-Hatfield Amendment. Many senators who are against the amendment voted with its supporters today. Their argument was that the tactic of one senator, in this case Allott of Colorado, calling up the amendment of another with the avowed intention of defeating it would set very bad precedent. McGovern himself said he would not have had enough votes today to pass his amendment. He said it will come up again probably late next month or in early August. Tomorrow, after nearly 7 weeks of debate, the Senate votes on the Cooper Church Amendment. It will prohibit any future military operations in Cambodia unless Congress first approves. One of its sponsors, Senator Church of Idaho, explained its significance.
It will prevent the expenditure of funds for those things that could involve us in Cambodia as we became involved in Vietnam. What if sometime in the future, 6 months from now, the president feels that he has to go in again and wipe out these sanctuaries?
If the Cooper Church Amendment becomes law, no, that would be the kind of decision that the president would then have to share with the Congress, which we think is the proper constitutional method for doing it. After all, the Constitution did not vest in one man alone the decisions of war and peace. And I think that the significant thing about the Cooper Church Amendment is that through it, Congress is beginning to reclaim its rightful role, its rightful constitutional place in these fateful decisions.
Even if the Senate passes the Cooper Church Amendment tomorrow, it will have to get by the more conservative, more hawkish House. And even if the House approves, it will still need the signature of the President to become law. Charles Quinn, NBC News at the Capitol.
The Huntley-Brinkley Report is produced by NBC News and brought to you in color by Monroe, makers of shock absorbers and load leveler stabilizing units.
We don't know how many accidents were caused last year because of mushy, worn-out shock absorbers that might have made folks lose control. Maybe it was only 1 in 50. Maybe it was only 1 in 50,000. But even if it was only 1, that's 1 too many for us. At Monroe, we make shock absorbers, and we know they can wear out. When was the last time you had your shock absorbers inspected?
Israeli Premier Golda Meir told her parliament today she welcomes the new American peace proposal for the Middle East, but she added Israel won't have any part of the 3-month ceasefire, which is known to be part of the American plan. Israel wants a permanent peace, she said, and besides, there's been no sign that the Arabs intend to stop shooting. Egyptian President Nasser arrived in Moscow for talks with Russian leaders, and far from talking peace, he's expected to ask the Soviets for even more weapons than they've already given him.
In different words, all Arab governments have rejected the new U.S. Mideast peace plan. Syria and Iraq have said there can be no peaceful or political settlements. The two Arab leaders most concerned, Egypt's President Nasser and Jordan's King Hussein, have publicly demanded that Israel withdraw from every inch of occupied territory before they could even think about a possible peace plan. There are some hints, and they are only hints, that some compromises might be made. But even if some Arab leaders might be willing to compromise, the Palestine guerrilla movement is adamantly opposed to any peaceful or political settlement that would ensure the continued existence of the State of Israel. To make sure that Arab leaders get the guerrilla's point, commando spokesmen have been reiterating a pledge made late last year that any Arab leader who would sign a peace treaty with Israel would be signing his own death warrant. Wilson Hall, NBC News, Beirut.
Egyptian ground positions put up a heavy screen of anti-aircraft fire today as Israeli planes raided objectives on the Suez Canal for the 38th straight day. In Jordan, south of the Sea of Galilee, there was an artillery and tank duel between Israeli and Jordanian troops. 3,700 more British troops are moving into North Ireland to help keep the peace between the Roman Catholics and the Protestants. They started fighting each other and British soldiers last Friday over Bernadette Devlin. Miss Devlin, a member of the British Parliament, was sent to jail for 6 months for her part in the riots of last August. So far, in the newest outbreak, 6 people have been killed, all but one of them Protestants, and more than 200 wounded.
The rioting mobs, Protestant and Roman Catholic, never seem to tire of striking with flames by night against businesses owned by people of the opposing faith. Economists and others warn that poverty-stricken Northern Ireland's chance of a better future under various industrial development plans is being washed away by the continuing violence. The British government, trying to stem the violence, has started flying in 3,000 extra troops to join the 7,500 already in the province as the Protestants' July demonstrating season draws near, and as the antique hatreds dividing the Protestant and Roman Catholic communities go on mounting. Roman Catholic families are moving out of a predominantly Protestant neighborhood, but a Protestant family also is moving away out of fear and disgust.
I can't bring up children under this, the circumstance we're living under at the moment.
Well, what's been happening to you here?
Well, been quite uncomfortable, the extent of small children, larger children coming and calling his names at night here when the kiddies are out of the door. They're learning language that they should never learn. Just taking it all in general, that it's just a bad way to bring up children, you know.
Meanwhile, the marching goes on and on. As far as many observers are concerned, all of Northern Ireland is marching, too, toward more violence, more poverty, because too many of its people love their past and its beautiful battles and hatreds. George Montgomery, NBC News, Belfast.
Foreign ministers of the European Common Market met today in Luxembourg to get ready to hear Britain's latest application for entry into the organization. Three other countries also have applied: Ireland, Denmark, and Norway. France twice vetoed Britain's bid to get in, but that was under de Gaulle, and the French attitude has changed under Pompidou.
Do you need a tonic?
I sure do, and here are seven reasons why. I take Geritol to make sure I get enough iron. Sometimes the kids don't give me time to eat right.
I take Geritol, too, for its seven vitamins. It's our family tonic.
Do you need a tonic?
I found out I had iron poor blood, and Geritol brought it right back to normal.
Geritol gives you twice the iron of ordinary supplements. Geritol iron gets into your bloodstream fast, carrying blood-building iron throughout your body. And Geritol gives you seven vitamins for nutrition, too. Do you need a tonic? Try Geritol.
11:10 p.m., can't sleep. 11:30, still awake. When you take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep and feel you need help, take Somanex. Its three medical ingredients quickly relax you and help you get to sleep. When you take more than 15 minutes to fall asleep, take Somanex and sleep, sleep, sleep.
A federal grand jury, five of whose 23 members are black, went to work in Jackson, Mississippi today to investigate last month's violence at Jackson State College, in which two young Negroes were killed and nine wounded by Mississippi Highway patrolmen. The court wants to find out, among other things, whether any federal laws were broken. Herbert Hill, labor director of the NAACP, says in a speech which he'll deliver tomorrow that the Nixon administration is destroying the Philadelphia plan to get more blacks into the construction trades. And he said that was a payoff to the building unions for their support of the Indochina War. But James Hodgson, who will be the new Secretary of Labor, said he expects at least 19 cities to have voluntary plans by the end of the year to put more minority group members in the construction trades. In New York, members of another minority, Italian Americans, held a big rally to protest what they called harassment by the FBI and the news media.
Most of the organizing and planning for Unity Day took place in Little Italy on Manhattan's Lower East Side. But today, Little Italy was deserted as thousands of Italian Americans closed down their shops and headed uptown for the rally at Columbus Circle. The green, white, and red colors of the Italian flag were everywhere. Many of the people, old ladies, children, and working men, were bussed in. It was a good-natured and warm crowd. The list of speakers was long, but no one seemed to mind as long as there was a good word said for Italians.
Yesterday, 30 courageous Italian-American people started a fight against discrimination, harassment, and defamation at the hands of the FBI. The FBI laughed and called it a passing fancy. The news media ridiculed and laughed at us in print. Today, we are united. Today, we are one. I thank you all, and God bless you all. Unity, one, we are one, one.
About 4 hours later, the crowd left Columbus Circle, cut across Central Park, and headed for FBI headquarters. In the crowd, a few people tried to run the barricades. Two policemen were reported wounded by ice picks, but most of the crowd was unaware of the incident.
Yeah! day. We got a lot of coverage. We didn't have any trouble. Let's keep it that way. Everybody, please, go home. Go home, and we need you never longer.
The FBI was asked for comment, but it said it had none. This is Liz Trotta, NBC News in New York.
The Supreme Court closed out its current term today. It ruled, for one thing, that a poor man cannot be kept in jail beyond his maximum sentence just to pay off fines. The court put off until October decisions on whether a man can be considered a conscientious objector if he is simply against the Indochina War. It also put off until the fall term decisions on school integration, obscenity, and the right of school teachers to strike.
Today's action in postponing decisions on busing and conscientious objectors who oppose only certain wars showed how gun-shy the court has become on controversial issues. Of 8 cases announced orally today, 5 were left essentially undecided. The lower profile urged by President Nixon's first appointee, Chief Justice Burger, and the delay in filling vacancies reduced the number of written opinions this term to 100, far below normal. Only a couple of decisions were noteworthy: the expansion of conscientious objector status and the approval of the tax exemption for church property. For the second year, the court postponed ruling on the biggest issue, capital punishment. Personality problems seem to be troubling the court under the pressure of Mr. Nixon's efforts to change it. Some of the justices have been insulting each other openly. Chief Justice Burger served notice he would not be bound by the alleged former misjudgments of his colleagues. Justice Douglas suggested his brothers were weaseling and waffling. The clerk of the court quit. Disunity and acrimony reached the point 30 years ago when President Roosevelt was trying to remake the court that the weekly day-long conference of the justices used to take up to 4 days. It hasn't reached that point yet, but the strains of a transitional period are showing. Carl Stern, NBC News, Washington.
The Huntley-Brinkley Report continues, brought to you by Silver Thins. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich. Thin so they taste light. Lighter than other 100s. Lighter than most Kings. Rich, well, because rich is better. Cigarettes are like women. The best ones are thin and rich. Silver Thins are thin and rich.
Mrs. Nixon and the wife of Peru's president flew by airplane and helicopter today into several villages in the Andes to do what they could for survivors of the earthquake that killed 50,000 people last month. Mrs. Nixon arrived in Lima yesterday from San Clemente, California, for a 2-day visit. 2 plane loads of relief supplies accompanied her.
Mrs. Nixon was met at the airport by Consuelo de Velasco, wife of Peru's president. Relations between the two countries haven't been this cordial since the takeover here by left nationalist officers in October 1968. Mrs. Nixon's visit is seen not only as part of an American humanitarian effort, but also as informal personal diplomacy.
I thank you for the warm welcome and for all these wonderful people who are out here to see us land. I must say that the plane is just loaded, not with people, but with things that I think that you can use in this country. I also bring greetings and affection from the people of the United States, who are saddened by the thought of the destruction here and the loss of life. And they want you to know that you're very much in their hearts and that they will continue to help until this land is reconstructed and everything is rosy once again.
In the earthquake zone, people do need help. The damage is every bit as impressive as it was a month ago, immediately after the disaster. In all, 800,000 homes are considered uninhabitable. In Casma, a town of 15,000, less than a dozen structures were left standing. The heroic period of dramatic rescues is over now. People in the disaster area are left with the grueling business of survival. Women are rummaging in the ruins for salvageable items. Men are leveling ruined homes for building materials. The government says that reconstruction will cost $500 million, and nobody knows where it will come from. One basic problem is that the government wants reconstruction, but without short-circuiting the revolutionary program which originally brought it into conflict with the United States. The military men in the presidential palace became heroes to left nationalists all over Latin America a year and a half ago when they nationalized an American oil company. Next, a land reform resulted in the loss by U.S. firms of important sugar holdings. While non-communist, the Peruvian Revolution seems unsympathetic to big business, domestic and foreign. The American embassy threatened reprisals, but the military government wasn't deterred by threats. And it says it won't allow the earthquake to divert it from its revolutionary program.
The government is readying new laws in commerce, banking, mining, and industry, which will make life more difficult for American business interests. It's called for a fraternal dialogue with Fidel Castro. At the same time, Peru would obviously welcome a massive injection of American reconstruction help. It's a question how long this era of good feeling represented by the visit of Mrs. Nixon can last. Tom Streithorst, NBC News, Lima, Peru.
The Organization of American States has condemned political kidnappings and terrorism, and today it suggested a special meeting be held within 4 months to approve ways of fighting them. Late yesterday, South Korea intercepted a North Korean speedboat. The six men aboard escaped, but today the South Koreans caught up with them and killed them all. Two South Koreans also were killed and eight wounded.
After a day of pressure, you feel distressed, nerves on edge, headache starts, pain, it's tension. Reach for Anacin tablets. Anacin relieves headache, pain, and its tension. Of all the leading tablets, Anacin has more of the one strong pain reliever doctors specify most. When pain goes, you can relax. Anacin relieves headache, pain, and its tension. Anacin.
Here's the fastest relief known for bronchial asthma attacks. Actually can restore free breathing as fast as 15 seconds. Proved by a doctor's time test. It's Primatene Mist. Primatene Mist penetrates into congested lungs, opens clogged breathing tubes, relaxes bronchial spasms, so asthma attack is relieved fast. Free breathing restored, in and out. Get Primatene Mist. Fastest relief known for bronchial asthma attacks.
The Senate today approved a measure to ban the shipment of nerve gas from Okinawa to any place in the United States. It also made money available to destroy the gases, presumably on Okinawa. The stock market opened the week the same way it closed last week, down. On the New York Exchange, the Dow Jones lost almost 5 points, the value of an average share dropping 26 cents, volume light. On the American Exchange, an average share fell 9 cents. Out in Pinole, California, they put up a housing development in a canyon. Everybody thought that was fine until they found out the canyon was infested with rattlesnakes.
The Pacific Coast rattlesnake. Deadly. This one is in captivity. We filmed it to show the problem. The problem is the town of Pinole, California is being invaded by rattlesnakes, or vice versa. This end of town was built 3 years ago in heavy rattlesnake country, and the snakes refused to leave. In the last 2 months, neighbors here have found 28 rattlesnakes.
I was coming out of the garage, and I walked over to the walk, and it was on the lawn, and as I stepped in front of it, it bit me.
His parents rushed him to the hospital immediately, but it was still 2 weeks before he could walk again, and now, a month later, he still limps a bit.
It's just that your life isn't a three, you're more or less cautious. You know, every time you open the front door, you have to look out first on the porch if there's a snake out, and the children playing on the yards, and they have to be careful, you know.
A three-year-old girl playing in the yard in her sandbox found what she thought was a big worm. She's not allowed to go out there anymore.
We just don't let them out.
They have to play inside most of the time?
Most of the time, yeah, we keep them in.
That's difficult for the children.
Yeah, it's difficult for all of us. But just a precaution we have to take. And we've just grown accustomed to it.
After a couple of articles about Pinole and its snakes, the mayor of this town has become very sensitive. His children have found rattlesnakes near his place, but he doesn't want to be interviewed and privately says only that there is no problem. Yet there are those who say if a proposed snake fence and traps around the end of town don't work, they will leave. Jack Perkins, NBC News, Pinole, California.
There's a Soviet government bank in London, and it gave the boss, a Russian of course, a big raise to more than $40,000 a year. Well, the Britishers who work for the bank wanted a raise too, and for just that reason. The bank, however, didn't want to give it to them. Remember, it's owned by the dictatorship of the proletariat, and the British proletariat threatened to strike. Well, that gave the Russians what we call a pause. Today, they gave in and gave the Britishers a raise, and there was no strike. Good night for NBC News.